श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गौर कृपा श्याम कुंड राधा कुंड गिरि गोवर्धन की जय वृंदावन धाम की जय मथुरा धाम की जय नवद्वीप मायापुर धाम की जय जगन्नाथ पुरी धाम की जय गंगामय जमुना देवी की जय भक्ति देवी की जय तुलसी महारानी की जय समवेत भक्तवृंद की जय गौर प्रेमानंद All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Vijaya Shri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitya Namani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaurani Pachani Nisesa Sanyavani Vaskachani Sachani. Vandeha Shri Guru Shri Uttam Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Sachan Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Vaganatam Vitam Sam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parichana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Shri Radha Krishna Param Sagana Lavata Shri Vishakam Vitamsha Vanch Kalpachu Vishaki Vasimadhyay Vitapati Chanam Pavane Vyo Vaishnavi Namo Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Bhagavate Vasudevaya April 16, 2015 in Alachua, Florida. Reading from Canto 10, Chapter 63, Lord Krishna fights with Banasura, and I've been asked to read 41 through 45, although there's a number of purports here. So we have up there 41. Devadattam imam lagda Nirlokam ajitendriyaha Yonadriyeta twatpadao Sashotsyo yatma vanchaka. Please chant. Deva, by the Supreme Lord, Datam, given, Imam, this, Labdhava, attaining, Nri, of human beings, Lokam, the world, Ajita, uncontrolled, Indriya, his senses, Yaha, who, Na Adriyeta, will not honor, Twat, Yur, Padao, Feet, Saha, He, Sochaha, Pitiable, He, Indeed, Atma, of Himself, Vanchakaha, a cheater. Translation purport. One who has attained this human form of life as a gift from God, yet who fails to control his senses and honor your feet, is surely to be pitied, for he is only cheating himself. Purport. Lord Shiva here condemns those who refuse to engage in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. Text 42. Translation. That mortal who rejects you, his true self, dear most friend and Lord, for the sake of sense objects, whose nature is just the opposite, refuses nectar and instead consumes poison. Purport. The person described above is pitiable because he rejects that which is actually dear, the Lord, and accepts that which is not dear and is ungodly, temporary sense gratification, which leads to suffering and bewilderment. Text 43. Translation. I, Lord Brahma, the other demigods, and the pure-minded sages have all surrendered wholeheartedly unto you, our dearmost self and Lord. So there's no purport here. Sridhar Swami does have a commentary here that Lord Shiva has been talking about himself, that he's apologizing to Krishna. He's apologizing to Krishna for having fought against him in this battle with Banasura, and he's saying, now myself and all the other demigods, we surrender to you. Text 44. Let us worship you, the Supreme Lord, to be freed from material life. You are the maintainer of the universe and the cause of its creation and demise. Equipoised and perfectly at peace, you are the true friend, self and worshipful Lord. You are one without a second, the shelter of all the worlds and all souls. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami states that the Lord is a true friend because he sets one's proper intelligence into motion if one desires to know the truth about God and the soul. Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur both emphasize that the term Bhava Pavar Gaya indicates the highest liberation of pure love of Godhead, characterized by unalloyed devotional service unto the Lord. In other words, Lord Shiva is not just simply talking about liberation or Brahman realization, he's talking about bhakti, according to the Acharyas. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti also explains that the Supreme Lord is Saman, perfectly objective and balanced, whereas other living beings, having an incomplete grasp of reality, cannot be perfectly objective. Those who surrender unto the Lord also become fully objective by taking shelter of his supreme consciousness. Text 45. This Banasura is my dear and faithful follower, and I have awarded him freedom from fear. Therefore, my Lord, please grant him your mercy, just as you showed mercy to Prahlada, the Lord of the demons. Purport. Lord Shiva feels inclined to help Manasura because the demon showed great devotion to Lord Shiva when he provided musical accompaniment for Shiva's Tandava dance. Another reason Bana is an object of Lord Shiva's favor is that he is a descendant of the great devotees Prahlada and Bali. So here Lord Shiva apologizes. He said to the Lord, you're objective, you're totally objective. You see things in an equipoised and neutral way. And please not only favor me, who's apologizing to you with devotional service, but also favor this Banasura. Why should you favor this Banasura? Because he's pleased me. He's pleased me by playing instruments when I was dancing, and he pleased me and has pleased you by being a descendant of Prahlad Maharaj. So these things seem contradictory, that the Lord is totally objective, and yet Lord Shiva is asking this totally objective Lord to favor someone based on a personal connection and personal favor. He's saying, please favor this Banasura because he did a favor for me, and please favor him because he was born in the right family. So it sounds like things are run not by what you know, but who you know. Right? Is that what it's all about? Is it not what you know, but who you know? Or is the world run? Is the world run as a meritocracy? I mean, because that's what Lord Shiva says here. He says you're objective. You're perfectly objective and perfectly balanced. Well, someone who's perfectly objective and perfectly balanced, they should be running things by a meritocracy. What do we call it when you give somebody a position simply because of family connection? Anybody know the word for that? Yeah. Nepotism. That's illegal. And showing, and someone does you a favor and you do them back a favor? And you give them some position which they've unearned simply because they've done you a favor? Sounds like what? What do we call that?
U.S. government.
Hare Krishna. What do we call that?
Bribery.
Yes. And we have to say frankly that practically speaking, all the governments in the world today are more or less corrupt. And I'd be loved to be proven wrong. So if any of you can find a government that has no corruption, that would be ecstatic. I will say that as somebody who travels all over the world and experiences many different governments, there are a lot of worse governments than the U.S. government. That we will say. But there's corruption everywhere in Kali Yuga in the government, but these things are at least technically illegal, yes? Nepotism and bribery, at least technically, are illegal. In some countries, they're very much the norm, even though they're not quite legal. Right? But it's still underhanded. Like I was trying to get a visa. Should I say to what country? I was trying to get a visa to Russia. Right? So I, the devotees unfortunately had sent me the papers a little late, and so when I went to the embassy in Ireland, they said, "Well, it's going to take us at least a week." And I said, "I only have 3 days." They refused to do it. So then I went to the embassy in Hungary. I said, "I'm going to be here a week." They said, "It takes 2 weeks." And so I was talking to one of the devotees, and they said, "Ormila, this is the Russians. You have to offer them a bribe." I'm like, oh. we don't think that way in America generally. So I made an appointment, and the whole head of the embassy was willing to see me, and I slipped a 20-euro bill into the papers. So, he's going through the papers and like that. And then he says, "Well, let me just talk to my supervisor," which I thought, he's the head of the whole embassy. What supervisor is he going to talk to? He said, "Let me talk to my supervisor and I'll be back." And not being schooled in the etiquette of bribery, I didn't understand that what he was doing was saying, "I need more." I didn't get that. So I didn't put any more. And he came back and looked and saw there was no more. And he said, "I'm sorry, I can't help you." So this kind of things, they're illegal. And in fact, Srila Prabhupada talks about the worshippers of the demigods, that the reason they're condemned is that they're trying to offer bribes. Right? Why does Krishna say they have less intelligence? And Prabhupada explains this very nicely in the Bhagavad Gita, where he says they want something that's undue to them, something they haven't earned by their karma. "Well, yeah, I haven't earned this by my karma, by my actions, but please give it to me anyway by my flattering you or by my serving you." By the way, when do we end? What time does this class end?
Quarter of questions.
Quarter to, okay, thank you. Thank you, Janmasthami. So this is considered improper. You're not supposed to go to the lesser officials and flatter them or bribe them to get something that you haven't earned. So why is this going on here then? And we see this as sort of a principle of bhakti, isn't it? Isn't it? That you please Krishna by pleasing the devotee? And that it's not so much what you do, that you can't really earn your way back to Godhead, but it's a question of getting the mercy and the blessings. Isn't this the whole core of our philosophy? Yes? Am I correct?
Yes.
So what's going on here? Is Krishna fair? Is this just a favoritism system? So, we might say that in the material world, things are done according to the law of what you earn and what you deserve. That's how things are run in the material world. And it's done so much so that Rupa Goswami says Krishna is dependable because the demons know if I follow the rules, Krishna is not going to kill me. I'm not going to get in trouble. Right? And I often give the example that there's a subterranean heavenly planet for pious demons. Right? I mean, in many religions of the world today say, okay, you got this one life, and you decide if you believe in God or you don't believe in God. You believe in God? Heaven. You don't believe in God? Hell. And that's it. It's just, do you believe in God or do you not believe in God? Right? I saw one bumper sticker, "Christians aren't perfect, they're just forgiven." So this kind of concept that, well, even if I don't follow the rules, if I believe in God, then I go to heaven. And even if you follow the rules, it doesn't matter. Even if you're a perfectly moral and pious person, you don't believe in God, you're going to hell. That's not what the Bhagavatam says. We have so many examples in the Bhagavatam of pious demons, don't we? Some of them are very charitable, some of them are very... And they get material opulence. They earn their material opulence. They can even earn very high positions. We have Hiranyakashipu, who earned, by his austerities, he earned the right to rule the universe. Yes? And this is how things work. And this is one of the reasons why people who want to believe in God, they look even at this earthly planet and they say, how does it make sense that some of the people with wealth and power and beauty and fame are atheistic? And some of the pious people are poor and ugly and diseased and so forth. Because this world is run as a meritocracy, as an objective meritocracy. The super soul is seated as if neutral. You get what you earn. This is a world governed by law. And you can't really get around the law just by flattery. And a lot of people take religion to be exactly that. They go to a temple, a church, a mosque, a synagogue, whatever, and, oh, you're great, you're glorious, you're wonderful, please cure my cancer. Hey, you're great, you're glorious, you're wonderful, please help me win the lottery. And this idea that somehow by flattery, you know, sometimes I'm going to bribe the Lord, or the Lord's going to be obligated to me because, you know, okay, I've waved so many sticks of incense, I've chanted so many mantras, right? Therefore, he has to give me what I want. This was the problem of the Brahmana that Narada Muni met. You all know that story of the Brahmana and the cobbler? So Narada met this Brahmana who was doing, he was doing everything. He was saying all the mantras. He was doing. And of course, I'm going to go to Vaikuntha. And he was so shocked when Narada said, the Lord doesn't even know when you're going to go to Vaikuntha, which is an interesting statement in and of itself that would lead us to a whole other topic about Krishna knowing the future. The Prabhupada says, the Lord says, I don't know when he's coming. It's going to be a long time. And the Brahmana was so angered by this. Wait a minute, I'm following all the rules. Isn't this a meritocracy? Did you really see Lord Vishnu? I don't believe it. What was he doing? Oh, putting an elephant through the eye of the needle. Ugh, you never saw him. You're just lying. Of course I am. And there's this tendency also to think like that. It can happen even in the Hare Krishna movement, that we can think, I'm earning my way back to Godhead by being a good devotee. You know, I wake up for Mangal Arati, I chant my 16 rounds, and I really try to focus on my 16 rounds, and I chant my three Gayatris, and I read Prabhupada's books every day, and I offer all of my food. I'm a good devotee, and I'm earning my way back to home, back to Godhead. That's how things work in the material world, where everything's under law. You can earn your way to heaven. Like Yudhisthira was shocked when he saw Duryodhana was in heaven, right? What's he doing here? Well, he earned his way here by dying on the battlefield. That's one of the tickets to heaven. And Yudhisthira goes, that's not fair. He's not a very nice person, to put it mildly. And Prabhupada says, you know, even you come to Krishna consciousness, you'll be excused for your past sins, but if you commit further sins after becoming a devotee, you won't be excused. So the material world does work like that. It's under the rule of law. But the spiritual world is not under a rule of law. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in Bhakti Loka, he says there's only two rules in the spiritual world. Have love and don't envy. And that's all. There's no other rules. There's no law. There's no government. You don't have to worry about how corrupt your government is, because there isn't a government. It's not needed. So there's not a system of meritocracy. It's not a system of earning. The system of earning comes because we want to be the controller. Ahankaravi mudhatma karta hamiti manite. I want to feel that I'm the doer. I want to feel that I am doing something which leads to a certain result, which is then there for me to enjoy. That's the basic mentality of the materially conditioned souls. I am the doer, I am the controller, I perform certain actions by my cleverness, by my influence, by my power and strength.
by my learning, whatever opulence we have. And by these opulences and my actions as the doer, kartaham, I am the doer, I perform actions which yield a certain fruit. And that fruit is there for me to enjoy. And even if I'm a theist and I say, okay, well, God has made these laws and God ultimately awards the fruit, still, kind of like what Krishna explained to Nanda Maharaj, okay, even if the gods are awarding the fruit, they're awarding it automatically. Just like a very low-level person in a business who can't break the rules. I'm sure you've all encountered those when you tried to complain to customer service about something. Right? You get one of these bottom-level, bottom-tier people, and you say, well, can we do this? And I'm sorry, these are the rules. Right? You met people like that? These are the rules. These are the rules. You have to follow the rules. You know, I just encountered somebody like that. A friend of mine had ordered something for me and ordered it overnight and didn't come overnight. And I called the, actually, first she called the company and they said, well, our overnight doesn't really mean overnight. You have to read the fine print at the bottom of the page. That was pretty amazing. You know, and then I got on the phone. I said, can you refund your shipping money since it didn't come overnight? And I'm sorry, that's not our rules. And then we had to go a little higher to get to the third level to get to someone who said, well, that's our rules, but we messed up. We'll refund the money. So the people at the lower level, they're just following the rules. Right? These are the rules. So that's what it's like in this world. These are the rules. I follow the rules, and I get the result, and it's mine because I earned it. Why should I give the fruits of my action to Krishna? Yakaroshi yadanashi yatahosi didasi yatapasasi kunteya sakirushva manaprana. That seems a very unreasonable demand on the part of Krishna. Because I earned the fruits of my actions, it's for me to enjoy. So that's the way that this world is run for rebellious souls. Because rebellious souls are not motivated by love. Rebellious souls have to be governed by rules. People who are motivated by love don't need to be governed by rules. When you actually love somebody, you don't do the right thing for yourself to get something. You do the right thing simply to make them happy. There's quite a difference between that. There's going to be a difference in consciousness, there's going to be a difference in relationship, and there's going to be some difference in action also. So if we want to enter into the realm of love, if we want to enter the realm of love, we have to follow the principles of love. Now, at least in the beginning, there's also some sense of rules. This is what we call Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Vaidhi is according to the Vidhi, according to the rules. And of course, even when there's love, you usually follow the rules. But you're not following the rules to follow the rules to get a result. You're following the rules to please the other person, and you understand that the essence is the pleasure of the other person, and if the pleasure of the other person involves something that's a little different from the rules, you'll do that also. Because you're not attached to the rules as a means to an end. So we're here as conditioned souls because we rebelled against love. We didn't want to love. We didn't want to be givers. We didn't want to enjoy through Krishna, as Prabhupada puts it. Rishikesha Rishikena Sevana Bhakti Ruchite. We didn't want to use our senses in the service of the master of the senses. We wanted to be the master of the senses. We wanted to be the center. That is, unfortunately, there's no other way to put it, it's envy. Envy is the opposite of love, as Bhaktivinoda Thakura says. It's the only thing not allowed in the spiritual world. Envy is malicious. It means I want to take something from you. Or I don't want you to have something. I want you to be lesser than me. So we wanted to take from Krishna, not want and want. If we're not already in prema bhakti, we still have some want now, currently, to take from Krishna. That is not love. And therefore we become subjected to the rule of law. So to go back to the world of love, yes, first we're engaged in some law of bhakti. Okay, chant 16 rounds, offer your food. Right? We have some rules. I remember it was in Europe, and this one man was coming to the temple. He said, it seems that the more I come to the Hare Krishna temple, the more rules I get told about. You know, just this rule book that keeps increasing and increasing. But we're supposed to be using these practices of bhakti not in a karmakanda sense, not in the sense of, this is something I do to get a result. You know, I'm going to earn my way back to God, and I'm going to buy my way back to Godhead. But as a springboard to reawaken that love. And love is about personal relationships. And love is causeless. You don't love somebody because they do something for you. You love them just because you love them. So what does it mean to love? So some psychologists looking at love, they've analyzed that love has three parts. You find somebody fascinating, like Krishna is all attractive, that one finds Krishna fascinating. Just like in this world, when people are in love, they'll just stare at each other, right? Even if somebody loves their car, they do that, and they're looking at all the everything. Look at this, right? What to speak of if you love another living being? And people on Facebook, you can almost always tell who they love. Who do they always talk about and post pictures of and post movies? Here's my dog begging, you know, whatever. So because they find their dog fascinating, anything their dog is doing is wonderful. Prabhupada talks about this with Krishna. He said that they would find anything that Krishna did fascinating because they loved him. I was just reading in Ananda Vrindavan Champu how Mother Yasoda, when Krishna was very little, she puts on this shiny gold garment, beautiful gold cloth on Krishna when he was a very little baby. And then Krishna immediately took it off and threw it away. Oh, this is a burden. That's what little children do, any of you have children. And Mother Yasoda thought that was charming. She was enchanted. She goes to put some nice clothes on Krishna, and he just takes them off. I don't want to wear these. So we find somebody fascinating. And then that person is important. They're not only fascinating, but they're important. There's so many things in the world we find fascinating, so many people, but we don't really care about them. It doesn't matter to us if they live or die, if they visit us, or if we see them or not, right? We have all kinds of things that fascinate us, but they're not meaningful in our lives. So if there's love, that person is meaningful. Like when Krishna is in Kaliya's coils, it says the residents of Vrindavan, they had invested everything in Krishna. That if Krishna were to die, they would have no reason to live. Mother Yasoda and Nandamars are trying to drown themselves in the Jamuna along with Krishna. The other residents are having to hold them back. What is the meaning without Krishna? Or as Rupa Goswami writes in Lalita Madhava, how some of the gopis, they just gave up their life after Krishna went to Mathura. What is the point? How do I? Sunyayitam jagat sarvam govindavirahinamai. Everything's empty. And then also love means that I'm there for you. What you need, I give you. This is the definition of Sakya in the nine processes, not Sakya rasa, not Sakya the sty bhava, but Sakya is one of the processes of devotion. Is Krishna, I trust you and you can trust me. I trust that you're there for me, as we say, that you have my back, and you can trust that I'm there for you. You can depend on me. So this is love. And this love is to be exhibited not only between us and the Lord, but frankly, between us and all living entities. Because every living entity is part and parcel of the Lord. Mamai Vamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana Jivara Swayapara Krishna Nityadasha. One who loves Krishna, once you love Krishna first, you have to love Krishna first, but once you love Krishna first, then you feel this love for everybody who's part of Krishna. Something like, Prabhupada gives the analogy, that when you marry into a family, you have a relationship with everyone into that family. Now, of course, we don't always love everyone in our spouse's family, right? It's not that because you marry a man, you necessarily love his mother and his brother and his sister. Places I go in the world where people still have extended family, one of the main problems that people come to me asking counseling for is, you know, how do I deal with this extended family member? I have a problem with my father-in-law, I have a problem with my brother-in-law. You don't hear that so much in parts of the world where we mostly have a nuclear family. But the principle was there. You know, you marry somebody, and immediately their family is your family. So when we love Krishna, his family becomes our family. and especially one feels love for Krishna's devotees. I was just hearing Prabhupada gave the example. He said, like, he says, just like when I'm in America, if you see someone else from India, he said, I as an Indian, if another two Indians meet each other in a foreign country, then, oh, where are you from? Right? This is natural. It's natural. We're from the same place. So the devotee has a special love for those who are also devotees of the Lord. So everyone who loves Krishna loves everyone who loves Krishna like that. So this is the entrance into the spiritual world. It's not bribery. It's not nepotism. It may look like that. It's not buttering up the devotee to get favors. You know, a little while ago I went to a home program and giving like a just open question answer session. At the end, the person who owns the house said, oh, here's some gifts for you. She gave me some gifts. I said, oh, thank you very much. She said, well, I want blessings from you. All right. So many times we deal with devotees like that. We understand when the scriptures say that in order to get the blessings of Krishna, you need the blessings of devotees. We deal with devotees not in a loving relationship, but as if they were some sort of a blessing machine. Or some kind of, I'm getting a score. Krishna's giving me a higher score because I served his devotees. You know, those three things, the foot water that washed the lotus feet of the devotee, the dust in the lotus feet of the devotees, the food remnants. Yeah, okay, well, if I get a lot of food remnants. And I've seen devotees, you know, who want to follow some of the advanced devotees in our movement as if they're rock stars. Have you seen that kind of thing? And their mood is not love, but the mood is I want to get something. How many blessings can I get? There's that funny story with Prabhupada on the train, where these young Indian gentlemen came and said, Swamiji, Swamiji, we want your blessings. Prabhupada said, if you want my blessings, you become like my disciples here. And he was sitting next to some sannyasis. The guys ran away. You know, this is my blessings, to surrender to Krishna. So when we say that when you please the devotee, here Bana has pleased Shiva, and because Bana has pleased Shiva, and because he's in Prahlad's family, the Lord is giving him benedictions. But this is because the Lord is trying to establish the rule of love over the rule of law. And this rule of love is, I love the devotee simply to make Krishna happy, not to try to get something. I love Krishna to make Krishna happy, not to try to get something. And I love the devotees to make Krishna happy, not to try to get something. I know it's going to make Krishna happy if we're cooperating, like the Prachetas. Krishna says, I'm so pleased with your cooperation. You see this with children sometimes. They're fighting, right? And then they start cooperating because they hope that they'll get dessert. But higher than that is to cooperate so your mother and father will be pleased. So we cooperate with the other devotees because that's going to make Krishna pleased. And because that is the nature of the spiritual world. The nature of the spiritual world is that everybody loves everybody. Everyone is fascinated with everyone. This is so nice to explain in the third canto. All the devotees in the spiritual world, they appreciate all the other devotees. In this world, we tend to be primarily fascinated with ourselves. Like Pran Govindapur, the other day I came to a shop and he's looking at my palm, and I was thinking afterwards, we're so interested if somebody's fascinated with us, huh? And we're so fascinated with ourselves. Oh, tell me about myself. Right, we can stare intricately at all the lines in our hand. What kind of person am I? But the spiritual world, everyone's fascinated with everyone else. And there, everyone's staring at the lines in Krishna's footprints that are left on the ground. Right, everybody walks around them, not to erase them. Everyone's appreciating everyone else. Wouldn't that be nice? In this world, most of us are not very genuinely appreciated, isn't it? Most people don't even notice probably 3/4 or 7/8 of what we do. They appreciate the results perhaps here and there, but they don't tend to appreciate our sacrifices. They don't tend to even be aware of them. People are very self-absorbed. So in the spiritual world, people are other-absorbed. They are really noticing each other. They are really noticing Krishna. They are glorifying the other's service. They step out of the way to let others do service. Even Srimati Radharani, she's always saying, Krishna, here's a better devotee than me. Here's a better devotee than me. Here's a better devotee than me. And everyone thinks everyone else is important. Everyone thinks everyone else is important. So we're working on Raghunath Das Goswami's Manashiksha Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about in the commentary how the Lord sends his very, the Lord Krishna and Srimati Radharani, they're sending their very dear servitors to the material world to uplift the fallen souls. I mean, we're so insignificant, my dear friends. We're so insignificant. If you go in an airplane, we become invisible very quickly. I assume most of you have been in an airplane. You don't have to go very high for the people to disappear. You can see the cars, but you can't see the people. The people are so tiny. Right? And even a whole city becomes insignificant when you go high up enough. The whole planet becomes insignificant. We're just a speck of dust. Our whole planet is just a speck of dust in the universe. I'm sure most of the residents of the universe can't even see our planet in their night sky. Like we can only see what the astronomers say, 5% of the matter in the universe. So we're so insignificant, but we're very important to Krishna. We're very important to Krishna, so important to Krishna that he comes personally to this little tiny planet in this little tiny universe, one of the smallest, if not the smallest of the universes, the planet of the four-headed Brahma. He comes to this planet, he comes to the Earth, which is the lowest of the middle planets in this universe. And he comes here as Krishna, he comes here as Lord Chaitanya. He sends his dear associates like Srila Prabhupada to come to this little out-of-the-way corner, this nothing place, for us very, very, very insignificant persons. Because to Krishna, nobody's insignificant. To Krishna, nobody's insignificant. To Krishna, each one of us is very important. That is love. So the residents of the spiritual world feel this kind of love for everyone, that everyone is important. Like Prabhupada wrote that letter to Jayapataka Maharaj, real surrender to Krishna means whatever you're doing, that is what you're supposed to be doing. Whatever is meant to be, Prabhupada said, that I am doing. And I should do that with great attention to every detail, no matter what it is. So that's the mood of love. Then I'm fascinated and it's important. And then one is dependable. Not that I come and get something from you for myself. I'm going to serve you to get something for myself, and after I get something for myself, or if I don't get something for myself, then I'm out of here. That's a merchant mentality. Merchant mentality is I go to a shop, I want to buy something. If they don't have it, I leave. If they have it, I buy it and leave. And I don't have a further relationship with the shop unless I want to buy something again. So that's not love. Love is I'm here for you. I'm here for you whether you have something for me or you don't have something for me. I'm not here because you have something for me. I'm here for you because I'm here for you. So to train us in this law of love rather than a law of law. Therefore, even in this world, Krishna is saying, serve the devotees, serve the devotees, serve not just the devotees, serve all the living entities. Therefore, we call all of the living entities as Prabhu. That is the sandwich. You know, we sign our letters, dear servant, your servant. Well, if I'm your servant, then you must be my master. And Prabhupada says, we see all living entities as our master. Shri Kirti, who tells the story how Prabhupada had a little bug in his room. And Prabhupada called Shruti Kirti and said, I think he's hungry. I think he's hungry. He's been here for a couple hours and there's nothing for him to eat here. Please put him outside. Prabhupada was acting as the servant of the bug. That's what you do to your master, right? Yes? If you're a butler, you're a maid. Oh, are you hungry? You must be hungry. Would you like something to eat? That's what you do if you're a servant. And Prabhupada was the servant of the bug. One time Prabhupada was talking about Varnashram and the reporter said, oh, so you must be the first class man, right? And Prabhupada said, no, I'm the fifth class man because I'm serving even the fourth class man. So that is the law of love. And our serving the Lord, our serving the Lord's holy name, our serving the deities, our serving the devotees, our serving all of the plants and the insects around us, our serving everything, is to train us to enter into this place of love. And that is what Krishna is reciprocating with. Oh, you're showing some love. You're loving my devotee. Okay, you come. So no, it's not about what you know. There's no test at the time of death on, you know, anamoya, pranamoya, vijnanamoya, manamoya. You know, the Yamadutas don't come and say that. They don't say, okay, which incarnation of Narayana in the spiritual world has the conch in the lower right hand? Come on, 5 seconds. Some of our Bhakti Shastri tests look like that, you know, devotional trivia. No, it's not what you know. But my dear friends, it's not even who you know. It's who you love. It's not what you know, it's not who you know, it's who you love. Because our entrance there is not about meritocracy. It's not about earning. It's about loving. And that's our yoga. That's our yoga. Karma yoga, gyan yoga, dhyan yoga, they can take you to a point. Karma yoga, you karma palatyaga, you give up the fruits of your work for the sake of your own salvation. Gyan yoga, you become very detached and full of good qualities for your own salvation. Dhyan yoga, you control your senses for your own salvation. And bhakti yoga, you love. So this is what we should ask ourselves. Who do I love? Who fascinates me? Who's important to me? And who can depend on me? Regardless of what there is in it for me. Just to love. Without getting something back. And the more and more and more we're motivated by love, that's our indication of how much we're advancing in this bhakti yoga. The indications of advancing in bhakti yoga is not whether or not you can live only by drinking milk. It's not whether or not you memorized every sloka in the Bhagavad Gita. That's a wonderful thing, but that's not the indicators for advancement. It's not even how much you can control your senses. Dhyan yogis are much... Ranyakashipu was a lot better at controlling his senses, I would guess, than any of us here. Yes? Anybody want to challenge Ranyakashipu to a sense control contest? Yes? So it's about who we love. And we should be asking ourselves that question many times during the day. Do I have love? And who do I love? Because as souls, we have to love something or someone. We cannot live really without love. So where is that flow? As Kunti said, like the Ganges forever flows to the sea, let my affection be drawn to you without being diverted to anyone else. Where is our Ganges flowing? Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So any questions? Again, I read all these, I was asked to read all these verses, even though some of that had purport. So if you wonder why I did all these verses. Yes, Prabhupada. Yes, you, yes.
Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, one day he was reciting this Jahara Prasadhi Bhai Bhavatriya Jai, Krishna Bhakti Bhai Jahari. And he commented that the conditioned soul should come to relative truth, not the absolute truth, because there is no direct connection in the conditional stage there. Therefore, disciples should always adore and fall in serve Guru in a Vishambhar Seva, very intimately, in loving you.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking in New Vrindavan, when after 7 days Bhagavatam, when this disciple asked Prabhupada, what can I do to please you? I want to show my love.
Mm-hmm.
And Prabhupada says, you follow these rules, regulation, and chant minimum 69, that will show love for you. And then in that conclusion that after we show love for devotees, then Krishna, love for Krishna automatically will go. But if I do want to develop love for Krishna without loving my guru or fellowship, it's never anywhere said that it will be directly.
Now that's interesting point. Actually, we say both. Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bija. And I just remember very clearly when I was with Srila Prabhupada in 1976, and my oldest son, who was about a year old at the time, was sitting on my lap. This was in New York. And Prabhupada looked at me and said, just like this mother is loving her son without any expectation of return, in the same way you should love Krishna. And my father asked Srila Prabhupada, will loving her son help her to love Krishna? Prabhupada said, no. But loving Krishna will help her to love her son. So also you find in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that prema is defined, quoting Bhishma, having all of one's feelings of kinship reposed in the Lord, loving only Krishna and no one else. So then the question arises, if I love only Krishna and no one else, this comes into play with Kunti's prayer also. let my attachments to the Vrishnis and the Pandavas be severed. Huh? The Vrishnis and the Pandavas are devotees. What is she talking about? And Prabhupada gives a wonderful purport there. He says, seeing in the darkness is not seeing, but seeing in the light is seeing. He says, the relationship has to be soul to soul via the super soul. So it has to be Krishna first. Frankly, even with Guru, because like we say with the demigods, don't worship the demigods independently. But you can worship the demigods as Guru. Brahma is our Guru. Shiva is Guru. We can worship Shiva as Guru. That is, it's in fact very much wanted. But as soon as we worship them independently, we're in trouble. So even if one worships a Guru independently, that's not pleasing. I mean, some touch with the great devotees, even if it's not very good. Prabhupada says, even if you offend the devotee, just like you have that, what was his name? Hoo-hoo, I think? Who was chomping on Gajendra's foot? What was his name? Hoo-hoo? I got it right? Oh, good. So Hoo-hoo, he's there chomping on Gajendra's foot for 1,000 years, and Prabhupada said, because this is so far out. This is so far out. Gajendra also at that point was a Kanista devotee, according to Rupa Goswami, because he's asking Krishna for relief from distress. So he's a Kanista devotee asking for relief from distress, and this guy's eating his foot. But by eating the foot of a neophyte devotee, he also got benedicted. Why? Because he was touching the feet of a devotee. Hare Krishna. So if you have some touch with a devotee, even if it's improper, that touch with a devotee has some effect. But the guru wants to be worshipped in relation to Krishna. Just like you're giving this example, Prabhupada, how can I show you I love you? Follow these rules and regulations and chant Hare Krishna. What is Prabhupada saying? How can I show you I love you? By loving Krishna. Like Prabhupada was asked in Atlanta, how can we please you the most? There was, if you know the history of ISKCON, behind that question, it was a very politically motivated question. And Srila Prabhupada didn't answer according to the political motives of the asker. He said, you can please me if you love Krishna. So that's what the pure devotee wants to see. Now you can say, but how do I know Krishna without the pure devotee? I can't. How do I achieve love for Krishna without the pure devotee? It's not, I won't even know who Krishna is. I can know something. I mean, I can look at nature and say there must be a god and he must be very clever and he must be very organized and he must like variety. But how do I really get to know him? Right? Like I can see all the paintings here and we can say something about the style of the artist from looking at the paintings, right? But if I don't meet you, right? Isn't it? Wouldn't I have to meet you? Just your paintings, would that be enough? I'd have to be introduced, yes?
I don't want to see you.
Yeah, but then we'd have to talk to someone who knows you. Either you'd have to reveal yourself or someone would have to reveal you. The paintings isn't enough. So looking at the creation isn't enough. Guru has to introduce you. Therefore, Guru Krishna, by the grace of Krishna, one gets Guru. By the grace of Guru, one gets Krishna. One has to have equal faith in Guru and Krishna. But we cannot love all living beings without loving Krishna first. That's not possible. If you try to love somebody independent, separate from your love for Krishna, it's not going to work. Even if that person is a great devotee. Therefore, Kunti is saying, I don't want to love my family members separate from my love for Krishna. I want to love my family members as part of my love for Krishna. And it's a subtle difference, but it's a very important difference. Yes, Madhavati.
I was wondering if you could elaborate on that subtle difference. Because as practitioners, we worship, you know, we love the sadhus, we love our spiritual master, and we know they are Krishna's devotees. But yet, from what I'm hearing, there is some subtle difference where we just, worship, even though we know these are devotees in relation to Krishna. Maybe you could elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, one way you can tell is your reaction. How do you react when the devotees you're serving get upset with you or don't reciprocate with you the way you want. That's a good test. How do you feel? There's a nice story with Gadadhar Pandit and Vallabhacharya, where Vallabhacharya forced his way into Gadadhar Pandit's house and started reciting his commentary on the Bhagavatam, which Lord Chaitanya didn't want to hear. And Gadadhar Pandit, sitting there, he was kind of a mellow person. And so he also, you know, you're not going to take somebody older than you. At least this wouldn't happen in India. Maybe in America we would do this, but in India at least, you wouldn't take somebody who's elder to you and a scholar and say, get out of my house. So Vallabhacharya just came in. I'm going to tell you my Bhagavatam commentary. And he just started reciting it. And Gadadhar Pandit was felt kind of stuck by etiquette. And he was thinking, all the devotees will criticize me, but Lord Chaitanya will understand. And that's actually what happened. The other devotees did criticize him, but Lord Chaitanya understood. So we're trying to please the devotee because that's what's going to be pleasing to Krishna. We're not trying to please the devotee to get something from art for ourselves. We're not even trying to please the devotee to get the good graces of Krishna for ourselves. We're not trying to please the devotee as a blessing machine. We're trying to please the devotee because we love Krishna. Now, when you have that love for Krishna, your love for the devotees is so deep that there'll be songs like Sri Rupa Manjari Pada. When Narottama Das Thakur has such love for this devotee, Rupa Manjari, that he's writing towards her the way one would talk to Krishna. If I don't see you, it's like I'm being bitten by a poisonous snake. You are the result of my japa, my tapa. Everything is for you. So the love that those who fully and only love Krishna have for the devotees becomes as deep as the love they have for Krishna, practically speaking. But still a little difference. You find like the coward men and women when Krishna became their child. Their love for him was a little different than for their own children who were devotees. Isn't it? It's a little different. Krishna is everything. Janaka Janaki Daita Tanai Prabhu Guru Patituhu Sarvam. All kinship reposed in the Lord. But because Krishna isn't alone, when you love Krishna, immediately you love everyone, including the devotees. If we are so-called loving the devotees to get something, or if we are loving devotees, this is something I've seen in a Hare Krishna movement, if we love the devotees the way we love a mundane family, these are my swajana, these are my people, like Arjuna said, these are my people, we will end up very angry, bitter, and disappointed persons. If we're thinking that my reason I love these people is they're my people, we're all in the same religion, we all have the same beliefs and practices, so they're my people. Like the way you feel when you're in a foreign country, when you see somebody from your country. Oh, it's my people. We have the wrong center. Even that Stephen Covey, he said, don't be church-centered. And your evidence of this is if you're serving the society of devotees as if they were a mundane family or your mundane nation or your ethnicity, when you're not treated nicely by people in that organization or by the leaders of that organization, you'll become very angry and very bitter and very frustrated. When that happens, you know, I have the wrong object. I have the wrong shelter. I've made something as my shelter that's not my shelter. If we are serving the devotees and the society with Krishna as our shelter, then no matter how we are treated, it won't matter. Will not become bitter, angry, and frustrated people. Because we know that Krishna is happy. So it's what is my motive Just like Prabhupada said, the guru never says, I am your best friend. He says, Krishna is your best friend. He said, I am your best friend in the sense that I am introducing you to Krishna. So the person who introduces you to Krishna is also your best friend, but in a different way. Yes, Janmashtami. Is that all right?
I have about 10 questions.
Why don't you pick the one that you want to ask the most? I'm sure you can ask the other 9 of people much more qualified than me at a better opportunity.
First of all, I'm blessed for your class. Excellent. I guess this meritocracy as opposed to the law of love, this is an area that I've been thinking about a lot. One thing that isn't against Uttama Bhakti is that we're aspiring for a higher level of bhakti. In other words, that we can achieve more love.
Yes.
There's 2 examples that on the surface may appear to be within the realm of meritocracy, but actually if you view it from the standpoint of how we can actually increase the pleasure of Krishna, then it's really not that way. So I'll give you the 2 examples that come to mind. When Prabhupada sent Satsarupa Das Adhikari, before he was took sannyas, and his wife Radharani Tribhuvan to Boston to start the first temple, for quite a extended period of time, nobody joined. And so Satsarupa Das Adhikari wrote to Prabhupada and said, well, it was like almost a year, and it was like they were really frustrated. So then Prabhupada responded by saying that when you consciously try to cooperate amongst yourselves, then Krishna will send so many people, which he did. You know, it became the largest project in ISKCON, and the ISKCON Press was located there. So that's an example, but it seems to me that their mood was, well, we love Prabhupada so much, and this is what he's telling us to do, so it was out of love, and this is how we
can do it. Yes, very nice.
Another example is when, I don't know if it was at the same time, but it might have been. This was in Atlanta, because that question, you know, how can we please you the most?
Yeah.
Savas asked the question of Prabhupada. This was when all the Adhidhamma bus party men were there, and the BBT party was there. And Savas asked Prabhupada, so Prabhupada, how can we increase our devotion? And also, how can we increase our enthusiasm to distribute books? And then, apparently, the way Prabhupada responded, first of all, he just looked up for a very extended period of time. And then he said, if you really want to increase book distribution, and he said it again, if you really want to increase book distribution, then you should chant your rounds without interruption. You finish your rounds before you do anything. And Savas is still doing that 40 years later. He's a temple president, of course. But and I experienced the same thing, you know, that it actually was a much, yes, I would distribute more books, but that wasn't so much the motivation. There was just so much better consciousness and so much more reciprocation that would come. On a platform of...
Of course, that specific instruction, I take that kind of a specific instruction as being given to a specific person, because Prabhupada also talked about how when he was a grahasta, he would chant his 16 rounds in 4-round increments. And I'll tell you something, if you have a very little baby in the house, and your mother with a very little baby, sitting down and chanting 16 rounds without interruption is only possible if your very little baby is sleeping. So if people think that such an instruction is an absolute requirement, then they may not chant at all. So I take that as an instruction given to a specific person for some specific reason with that specific person of which we may not be aware. We're running out of time. What do I do as far as time? It's already 9:05. I don't know what your rules are here. I can go on. Okay, well, I don't want to go on too long. Did you have a question there first?
Yes. The type of love that describing, you know, about Krishna.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm thinking to myself, the only way, like you're saying, to do it is to, you know, purify your chanting or whatever you're doing. And sometimes when you're doing it, like you said, if you have a family, your family, everything is broken up. The chakra is broken up, and sometimes you're not able to get that concentration. So years after years, you know, 20 years down the road, I'm thinking to myself, I have to get to the level of the national saint, chant all the runners at one time, you know, if you're addressing the deities, your consciousness to be higher. But sometimes it's, I don't know, how do you do it?
There's such a nice verse in the 10th canto. I think it's in chapter 44. I'm not sure. I'm so sorry. It's where the ladies of Mathura are glorifying the residents of Vrindavan and saying how even while they're doing all their household chores, they're always remembering Krishna. So that's our point, is Mama Nusmara Mujicha. Always think of me and fight. We are not being told to be, you know, yogis, go off, go. We're, chapter 6 of the Bhagavad Gita is not really the process that we're following. Okay, that's not go off and sit on a deer skin and don't talk to anybody and stare at the tip of your nose and just that's not our process. Our process is much more Mama Nusmara Mujicha, Yakaroshiyata Nashiyata Hosidasya. And Bhagavad Gita 12:2 is really nice. Read that purport. Prabhupada said you're going to the marketplace, you're in samadhi. So the samadhi of the Dhyan yogis has first pratyahara. Pratyahara is something like deep sleep. You become unaware of your surroundings. And you enter into a mechanical samadhi where you're in trance. We have all these examples of these people in samadhi who didn't hear anything, right? Chamaka Rishi didn't hear when Maharaj Brihad came in as the emperor with his, I assume, rather commanding voice. Give me water! And he didn't hear him. It probably asked more than once, also one would assume. That's not our samadhi. We are trying to go into a samadhi of love. If you've ever been in love, if you've ever had felt romantic love, you know what that means. Don't you just think about that person, like, all the time? Really? All the time? You're going to your classes, or you're doing your job, or you're driving the car, and you're just thinking of that person. Am I correct?
Yes.
Or any of you had a child? At least when the baby is very small. I don't know what it's like for the father, but for the mother, it's certainly like that. All you're thinking about is that child. You go in the next room, you're thinking about that child. You're cooking, you're thinking about that child. Are they okay? Are they okay? You wake me up in the middle of the night. Are they breathing? Now, in this world, that doesn't stay. I'm not calling my 40-year-old son and asking him if he's breathing. that attachment lessens. But that's the kind of samadhi we're looking for. And that samadhi is available to anyone in any condition. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you're an intellectual, it doesn't matter whether you're running a government, it doesn't matter whether you're running a business, it doesn't matter whether you're an artist, it doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman, which is a little radical idea for some people in the Hare Krishna movement, but it doesn't matter, you know, if you're old or young, it doesn't matter if you have 178 IQ or a 78 IQ, it doesn't matter if you've learned all the verses, or if you're reading the Bhagavad Gita upside down because you can't read. It doesn't matter if you have the kind of life and health and schedule where you can wake up at 2 in the morning and chant 32 rounds before Mangal Arati, or you have, you know, triplets running around that are 2 years old. And you're chanting your 16 rounds somehow or other during the day. It doesn't matter. What it matters is, do you love Krishna? That's what matters. And I will tell you frankly, some of the most advanced devotees in our movement, and I mean actually advanced, people who've realized their swarup, who are walking around on this planet, apparently, but they are in Goloka Vrindavan, are people who have careers and families and children. Some of them, you may be surprised, are even women. Some of them, you may be surprised, are only 30 years old. We have very, very advanced devotees in this movement who are, you know, not old in years and not in some big, have some big profile. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you love Krishna. And anybody, how can you not love Krishna? Just look at him. Is that all right? Yes, for Gavaka.
I also have many questions, but...
just pick one.
The last one.
Okay.
You mentioned that we don't want to see the devotees as blessing machines.
Yes.
Yet, one observes that let's say anyone who comes to you seeking a blessing before embarking on an important, significant stage in their life or a project or whatever, it's endearing, is it not?
If there's love. It's subtle.
I see.
Okay? It's a subtle difference, but it's like two lines, and one can move a millimeter, and it ends up all the way over here.
I see. If there's that, there's that loving bond that you have with this person, they would naturally come to you and
want something to please the beloved. You know, it wants something to please the beloved. Just like the husband and wife both love the child. Yes? Both the husband and wife love the child. If the wife says to the husband says to the wife, help me to do something for our child. Now, this doesn't always happen, but generally, there's this conjoint thing where they want to help each other for the child, or the brother and sister want to serve the father together. Or the employees want to serve the company together. I mean, it doesn't always work that way in this world because things are such a mess. But that's some idea. So naturally, if someone comes to you, please help me to serve Krishna better, of course. I'm trying to please Krishna. I'm trying to make Krishna happy. Can you give me blessings and give me help to do that? I'll give you everything. I'll give you everything, whatever I have. Oh, you're going to please Krishna? You're going to make Krishna happy? Really? I can't make Krishna happy, but if you can make Krishna happy, I'll give you everything. That's very different from, okay, I'm really tired of suffering this material world. Man, I'm so tired of suffering this material world. These things are just not working out for me. You know, if I were to go to Goloka Vrindavan, then I'd be happy because there's these kalpavriksha trees and there's so many dust and there's this ongoing party. It sounds like a really nice place. Sounds better than Swarga. I don't even have to come back. Okay, let's see. All right, how do I do it? Well, that person, they have the key. So if I just flatter them and I just do things for them, they'll give me the key. It's completely different. Is that all right?
Sure.
And yes, everyone, this is going to have to be the last.
Me.
Oh, no, this... Sorry, because you already said something. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Here I am displeasing the devotees.
Very nice class. I also was trying to reconcile a little bit because, like, Rupa Samyakpa is given so many things in relation to Guru.
Yeah.
So that our relationship with Guru will not be mechanical, but he said it has to come to Vishwambena Guru Seva, which means there'll be a deep love for Guru.
Yes.
And in this deep love for Guru, it will unfold what is love for Krishna, because prior to that, any jiva will not be able to comprehend what it means to love Krishna. The notion will be there, and even information content may be there about who Krishna is.
Yes.
But the actual transcendental sentiment will come from the heart of Guru at the time of Diksha to the heart of the disciple. So the flourishing of that relationship unfolds what is love. And exemplifying that is that Raghunath Das Goswami, Rati Manjari herself,
yes,
could not go directly to Mahaprabhu, but had to go to Akanda Guru Tattva Nityananda before he could go to Mahaprabhu.
So nice to give a class here in Alachua.
So I was just trying to reconcile.
But why are you going to Guru? Now, even if you go to Guru for some mundane reason or for some motive, you know, still the touch of the pure devotee says in Bhagavatam, Atma Virya, they have their own potency. We use in the example of Gajendra. Why are you going to Guru? Aren't you going to Guru because you want to learn how to love Krishna? Isn't that why you're going?
Yes.
So therefore it's not separate.
But.
No, there's no but.
It's true.
There's no but. It's not separate. Therefore, it's just Chaitanya Prabhupada would say, even the beginning devotee, if they don't have an ulterior motive, is a pure devotee. It's a circle. I'm going to Prabhupada because I want to learn how to love Krishna, and I can't just go to Krishna. I can't. But I'm going to Prabhupada, I'm going to my guru. Why just guru? Why not all the... There's so many Vaishnavas. I'm going to the Vaishnavas to learn how to love Krishna. We have so many gurus. And they're teaching us how to love Krishna. I tell you, I've learned a lot about how to love Krishna, not only from Srila Prabhupada, but from Prabhupada's followers, from Prabhupada's grand disciples, great-grand disciples. I have learned so much about how to love Krishna that they exemplify it for me. But the point is that we don't go to them separately. We don't go to them to get something for ourselves. Therefore, Krishna is first. Does that make sense? I may be going to the guru first, but Krishna is first. Because I'm going to the guru to love Krishna. And if you go to the guru for another reason, the guru won't even be happy. So if you go to the guru and anything else is first, the guru will correct you and say, no, put Krishna first. No, put Krishna first. So, yes, you have to go to Krishna through guru. You have to approach Krishna through the devotees. At the same time, Krishna is first. And this is a great mystery. Prabhupada talks about this in the end of the Bhagavad Gita. How you go through the disciplic succession, but the experience is direct. Yes, you all know that purport? And he says this is a great mystery. So how to sort this? Because Krishna says, one who's my devotee is not my devotee. One who's a devotee of my devotee is my devotee. But again, once the of course, even if you go to the devotee for the wrong reason, even if you're going to the devotee to bite his foot off and eat him, and even if the devotee you're going to bite his foot off and eat him is a neophyte devotee, by touching the devotee's foot, you get the mercy of the Lord. Even if you're a prostitute and you're going to the devotee to ruin his name and fame in the community, to defame him, you're going to get paid some money to defame this great devotee. Even if that's your motive, a touch with the devotee can be a miracle and can transform you into 3 days into a Mahabhagavat of whom everyone wants to come and take darshan. So even if we're not putting Krishna first, the touch of the devotee is so wonderful that we can end up putting Krishna first. But better to approach the guru and the devotees for the purpose initially of loving Krishna. That is the purpose. Dear Guru Maharaj, please help me to love Krishna. Show me how to love Krishna. Train me in loving Krishna. I'm very fallen. I don't know who Krishna is. I can't find Krishna. I don't have any love for Krishna. I'm just a fool. You have love for Krishna. Krishna is yours. You have the power to give him to me. I am simply running after you saying, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And now, I hope you'll forgive me. I'm sure I presented everything upside down and backwards, and I'm sure whoever speaks tomorrow will correct everything. And thank you very much. Let us take prasadam. Srila Prabhupada.